Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Today's episode is brought to you by Hack the Entrepreneur, the book, hack number 46, UGG Boots, an incredible vision. You don't climb straight from nothing to something big. You hit an obstacle, climb over it, and reach the next level of the plateau. You cross the line again, cross another obstacle, and climb to the next level again. The more you do that, the more you will look back and realize how far you've come. It's all about overcoming each obstacle as it hits and not giving up. Brian Smith, founder of UGG Boots. You can get that and 49 other brilliant hacks in my book, Hack the Entrepreneur, as well as the very best work that I have ever done in my life. Seriously, I poured my heart and soul into this one to help you do work that matters this year. Don't take my word for it. Seth Godin says about the book, "This book is filled with gems, with generous insights that can change the way you work. You can make something happen, and I hope you will." Grab a copy of Hack the Entrepreneur today, htebook.com, or go straight to Amazon and look for Hack the Entrepreneur.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. It is so very, very cool of you to join me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a travel hacker, film producer and editor, photographer, podcaster, and an entrepreneur. He's the founder of ZMB Media, a highly successful video production company. He's had opportunities in the White House and on the set for a Netflix original series. His videos can be seen in football stadiums and on major TV stations across the United States. But after realizing that there was more to life than settling for the script that had been handed down to him, he took 2-month hiatus from life to couch surf and travel hack his way around the country. When he got back, the Year of Purpose was born. He is now the host of Year of Purpose podcast and is the author of Life Rescripted. Now, let's hack Zephan Blacksburg. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Colin Gray, the podcast host. If you are a fan of Hack the Entrepreneur, you already know the power of podcasting. It is second to none in building trust, engaging with an audience, and creating a tribe of loyal fans for your business. The podcast host is a company that helps anyone start their own show and make it a success. You can learn the craft through their online courses, no technical knowledge required. Or let them take care of the entire process with their production services. You do the presenting, send them your plain, mistake-filled audio, and they do the rest. See the memberships that they offer at thepodcasthost.com/hack. And for being a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you will get half off your first month with the promo code HACK. That is thepodcasthost.com/hack. Promo code HACK will get you 50% off your first month. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Zephan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me here, John.
Absolutely my pleasure. This is going to be a blast. All right, Zephan, let's jump into it.
All right.
As an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Totally. So I tend to look at the world just a little bit differently than most people. You know, I'm a videographer, I'm a photographer. And one of the most important things I ever learned was that if you look at what everyone else is doing, go and do the opposite. So just for example, if I'm, you know, at a wedding, and everyone's pulling out their phones, taking pictures, right? They're getting a totally different vantage point from that side of the altar. Whereas if I were to walk around back or to the side, you're seeing something totally different. You know, you might capture the mom in tears in the front row while he's, you know, the groom is putting on the ring. There's all these things that you're going to see that you wouldn't have otherwise seen. And so I've always kind of flipped things around and done them a little bit in reverse. And in doing so, the biggest thing that I do in reverse is my calendar. I actually use my calendar more as a to-do list to show when I've completed things and when I'm supposed to complete things. So many people just write out bullet points or, you know, get a sticky or a post-it note and write down what they need to do. I actually just throw them all on the calendar and then start rearranging them as I complete them. And it's almost like a task list of completed items.
Wow. So you do your calendar in reverse. That's awesome. How long have you been doing this for?
Probably going on 2 or 3 years now. I mean, it's something that people make fun of me for it every now and then. But I mean, you know, everybody functions differently. And I'm actually a very visual learner. So it's so much easier for me to, you know, pull up the whole week and say, okay, like, here's the 25 things I have to do. Let me kind of like, all right, I'm going to get started with this one. And when I can move them around and interact with them, it helps me to accomplish things quicker because I can visually see how many things I have to do that day, how long they're roughly going to take. So, you know, I'll schedule things out for longer if I think I need a few more hours. And it lets me really see what's on my plate.
So what do you use for software for this? I know that everybody's thinking like, wow, this might be why I don't get anything done.
Yeah.
Maybe I can try this. What are you using for software?
You know, I'm plain and simple. I just use the Apple Calendar that comes on your iPhone and your Mac. And I also include Google Calendar as well in that. So it lets me see my different schedules, you know. So Google Calendar tends to be for some of my podcast and my book work and those things for my online business. And then my actual calendar that comes with the computer tends to be my video production company. So I can kind of see this color-coded representation of everything that I have going on. But yeah, I mean, nothing too fancy other than, you know, I use a scheduler like many other people where you can click a link and if someone needs to schedule a podcast interview or things like that. But I like that it syncs across the board, you know, whether it's on my phone, it's both on my laptop and my computer at home. I can log in from pretty much any computer in the world and be able to see the calendar. I like that it's everywhere and it's always accessible.
Nice. I like it. And then if something doesn't get done this week like it was supposed to, you take that, say, 1.5 hour blocks and you move it to next week. Just push it forward.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't want to use that as an excuse most of the time to, you know, to procrastinate or anything like that. So typically, you know, if let's say it's the end of the day on Friday and I know I have this big thing I have to do first thing next week, you know, I'll put it right on Monday morning and I'll see it and I'll know, oh yeah, I have to get this done. You know, this is something that I didn't get to yet and it's more important than the other thing. So it also allows me to like almost rank things within my day based on importance.
Nice. I love it. All right, Zeph, and we're going to go back now if we can, because there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life when they realize one of two things. Either they have this calling to make this huge difference in the world, or they find that they just simply cannot work for somebody else anymore. So could you tell me which side of the fence you see yourself on and when you discovered this about yourself?
So the funny thing is I actually hit both of these points at two different points in time, but I would take us back to May of 2013, where I was working kind of an in-between job. So my first job out of college was with a marketing company, as you know, Glazer Kennedy Insider Circle. I did a lot of videography work with them. I traveled the country and filmed conferences. We had a studio at our home base in my hometown of Baltimore. And after a period of time, one of the owners actually had sold his portion and the company got moved to Chicago. So they basically said, you know, the company's been bought out. We're not taking you with us. Here's your pink slip. And the funny thing was, I'm coming from this company that teaches business owners how to be successful business owners. And I hadn't quite considered yet starting my own business. And so I scatterbrained, I'm running around trying to find a job and ultimately wound up working at the Apple store, fixing iPhones at the Genius Bar. And one day, a year later, I had just had enough of working for this huge company where I couldn't make a difference. You know, any changes that I wanted to make had to go through someone who had to call somebody else, to email, to fax someone else, you know, to ask their grandmother's cat's cousin. You know, it was at this point where it was like, I saw so many ways where we could be more efficient and more effective. And there's just no way that my voice was going to be heard. And ultimately, just a bad customer experience pushed me to leave. I had been freelancing a little bit on the side. And one of my mentors kind of took me out to dinner and said, you know, you've been freelancing. You've been doing this already. You know, having your own business isn't much different than this. You're just doing it 40 hours a week instead of showing up at the Apple store 40 hours a week. And that was really when it just all kind of made sense. It was like, why haven't I done this? I've already learned the skills. I've already, you know, put the mentors in place that can show me how to do this. I've read all the books and been to all the conferences. It just made perfect sense to finally jump off the 9-to-5 world and start my own video production company.
So that was the basically what you were kind of working in and then sort of freelancing in, you went, that was the default sort of, this is what I need to do. I'll start this company.
Yeah. So, I mean, I had gone to college for it. I majored in film and video in college. So it was definitely a skill that I had had for quite some time, something that, you know, I had worked that role in before Apple. And so it was the one big thing that I was extremely good at. I just wasn't taking advantage of that, which was crazy to me. It's like, why aren't you making money doing the one thing that you're best at?
Yeah, it's true. And so it's interesting. And then you run a video production company offline. You've made the transition. You also have a business online now, but you like to travel.
Yeah.
So how does travel work with having a physical offline business?
So at first I thought that it wasn't possible. You know, I've got tons of gear from cameras to tripods to lights. I mean, whatever you have to bring with you for the shoot, you'd think that it's near impossible to make it anywhere outside of, you know, a driving radius of your home. And it wasn't until I remembered back to my Glazer Kennedy days, we would ship a pallet and just put everything on it. And now they actually have rental houses where they'll ship it for you. So you can pay to rent out video gear and have it shipped to pretty much anywhere in the country. And once the cameras had evolved a little bit, we're actually at a point now where all I need is a Pelican case that's actually can fit right into my carry-on bin in an airplane and a big duffel bag to fit my tripods in it. And I can pretty much travel anywhere and cover any event. So it was really more of just waiting for the technology to catch up with us, waiting for things to get smaller and more portable. But also, you know, now we have these companies that can afford us the opportunity to rent equipment and have it sent. And it was really just seeing it possible for the first time. It's kind of like that 5-minute mile. You know, nobody could break the 5-minute mile barrier until they saw one person do it. And then like the next month, 100 people did it. It was one of those things where it was like, I didn't know that I could do that until I saw it become possible. And then I just did it and it worked and it clicked and I kept going.
Yeah, great. I mean, analogy with the 5-minute mile and almost every other single thing in life. We don't think it's possible until we do it or we see somebody else do it. And then we're like, oh, we can do that.
Exactly.
You really just have to do it. But so are you finding work though? Like when you move, like do you find physical work now where you're somewhere else? Like I'm just trying to get my head around how, because I know there's people listening and they have physical businesses. They're also trying to make the transition into online, but they haven't completely at this point. But the idea of mobility is why most people want to come online. Well, scalability and mobility. But how do you like keep it going? How do you keep business going when you're now in a completely new physical location? Besides moving your gear there,
yeah.
How do you get work?
So one of the fortunate circumstances of a lot of these travels is that it really started actually with one conference. One of my clients hired me and flew me out to a conference. She had like 300 people in attendance, bunch of good sponsors and companies there. And so I set the goal and the intention when I went there of saying, well, I'm going to try to find 3 more clients out of this. I mean, there's over 300 people here. They're all business owners. You know, they're all potential clients for me. And the best part about being a part of her team and being, you know, kind of like that group of cool kids that's running the event is that the sponsors and all these people that paid a lot of money to be there see you as the expert that she chose, you know, she handpicked to be working with her team. And so I would start talking to a lot of people at the sponsor booths, and I knew that they had money because they had just spent 10, 20, 30, who knows how many thousands of dollars to be there. And I knew that, you know, they could always seek more clients or more marketing materials because, I mean, they just bought a vendor booth. It made perfect sense. That's what they were there for. And so I started talking to them, and every conference I would go to, I would get 1 or 2 more clients, and then they would fly me out to their conference, and then I could meet more people. And it was just kind of like this domino effect of referrals and also leveraging the position that you've been put in. You know, you're handpicked as the only video guy at a conference. Of course, you're going to appear to be the expert because there's 300 people in the room that know nothing about it.
Not a, just appear to be, you are the expert.
Correct. Give myself a little more credit.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like you're not like pulling the wool over their eyes. But that's awesome. I mean, you love to travel. And so like, be creative. Think like, just like think a little bit differently than people and think like, how can I maybe meld my business with travel? I'll just find work in different cities. And when I go to those cities, I'll meet people who are in different cities who also need my work.
Totally. And eventually you build a network of people where it's like, hey, you know, I'm going to be in Miami next month. Is there anyone that needs some photo headshots done for your website or, you know, a new promo video while I'm in town? And I'm sure, you know, using Facebook, social media, emails, I mean, you can find people who need the work to be done or at least say, oh, yeah, you know, I could probably spring for that right now. And I should definitely add in there that out of the 25 flights that I flew in 2015, I only paid for about two or three of them. I actually travel hacked the rest of them. And so being able to tell my clients, hey, you don't have to incur the cost of paying for my flights or my travel, I can get it for free. That was huge for them because then it was essentially the same as hiring anybody locally because it costs about the same amount other than putting me up in a hotel, which sometimes even then I could actually travel hack and get it for really cheap or almost free.
I promised I wouldn't put you on the spot. But now that you're mentioning travel hacking, and I know like people's ears just perked up who haven't heard of travel hacking, do you have like a go-to resource that you would send people to? Where would they learn travel hacking?
Yeah, there's essentially travel hacking, at least in my case and most people's cases, is they play the credit card rewards points games.
Yeah.
But this doesn't have to mean spending thousands and thousands of dollars. There's actually some cool methods out there. But Reddit.com is a very popular blog website, but they actually have a subreddit called Churning, Churning. And churning is kind of this process of generating these sky miles and these bonus points with credit cards. It's completely legal. You know, some of the credit card companies probably frown upon it because obviously we're getting free stuff from them, but there's nothing illegal about it right now. And so people take advantage of these loopholes.
That's awesome. Reddit.com/r/churning.
Yep.
That is the subreddit. I'll link to that in the show notes for everyone if you want to check this out. But sorry, I just had to do that because I know people are like, what's travel hacking? So
yeah, definitely. That's one of those things where it's like I could go on for like 2 weeks and make you a pro on it. But
yeah.
But yeah, we'll definitely for another time.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. So your one thing is that you have this skill or this knack or inherent sort of thought process to look at things differently. When you see everybody looking from one direction, you go to the other. And that's awesome. But now every blog post, every expert talks about the 80-20 rule. So do 20% of the work, get 80% of the results, do what you're good at and delegate the rest. Zephan, can you tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
Totally. And I think it's so important to know what your weaknesses are. And for me, it's kind of lack of focus sometimes. I can be so honed in on a project, but the second that it's close to done, I'm almost done with it. I was always that kid in school when I wrote my research papers. If I finished writing the last paragraph, I didn't even care about the grammar or the spell check. It was done in my mind, like it was gone. And so I know that one of my biggest weaknesses is that when a project is essentially like 90 to 95% done, I'm kind of like through with it and on to the next idea, which it works relatively well in many entrepreneurial cases. But to that same point, sometimes you don't always see projects through to completion, and then you don't get to reap the benefits of what you've just created. So, you know, I have a bad habit sometimes of almost enjoying the process of making the content online more than I enjoy the process of trying to sell it to people, which, I mean, it's great that you have fun doing that. I mean, making content for most people can be boring or can take quite a long time. It can be very tedious. And for me, like, I love sitting there and spending 8 hours on a landing page, but that's not what's making me money. And so very often I have to kind of like take a step back and say, you know, that this is not going to do me any good anymore. And prime example is my book that I just launched. You know, a couple people read it and said, oh, yeah, there's some spelling errors and things in there. It's like, yeah, you know, I had an editor and a proofreader go through it. They're obviously not perfect. Could we have run it through a few more rounds? Absolutely. But it was more important for me to get my story and my message out there than it was to, you know, be missing a comma here or there or, you know, misspelling a word.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're the first person I've heard explain it in this way, and how even like in school, you'd like just about finish it and just give. And I'm the exact same way. It feels really good to hear you say that. I love creating it. I love writing to the point where it's almost that last punctuation mark is there. And then it's like, just get it out of my, I just need to move on to the next thing.
Yeah, like it's got to be off the desk. Like I'm turning this paper in, I'm done with it.
Yeah, almost to a fault, but that's all right.
Yeah.
All right, so talking about your book, this is a great place to launch into talking about projects. So projects can be a very loose term, but let's decide on, say, your book. So your book is a massive undertaking, a huge, it's the first book you've ever written. And not only do you have to write it, get it proofread, rewrite it, then get artwork, all that stuff, and then launch this book and promote it. It's a huge, like, amount of just time, energy, resources. How do you, Zeffan, at this point in your business, both offline and online, decide when something, a huge project like your book, is definitely something that you should put your time, energy, and resources into?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I'm still learning, to for starters. I mean, sometimes I've definitely worked on things and I'm like, man, like I wasted 3 whole days on that, and it wasn't, it's not going to bring in any more money. It's not going to help me. So sometimes it's complicated, and it's really just a learning experience of making these mistakes. With the book, one of the things that I learned is you're not going to become a millionaire or a thousandaire overnight. Like it doesn't happen. Selling 99-cent Kindles does not make you rich unless you've sold a million of them. And so I think that part of it is making mistakes and learning which things worked and which things didn't. And then part of it is kind of going back afterwards and playing through the script of like, what happened? What were the things that I did? What are the things that I didn't have to do? And really learning from that lesson for next time and knowing, hey, these like 3 weeks I spent on the cover design for the book weren't nearly as important as, getting it to the editor or the proofreader. So I think it's really kind of a trial and error thing, trial by fire in a sense. And then also really just sitting down and writing out everything that you have and ranking it based on priority, much like how when we were talking about the calendar, if I have something on Friday afternoon that I was late to deliver and I know that this is the first thing that I have to do, it's going to go on the calendar at Monday morning, and I'm going to see it because I get up at 4:30 in the morning on Mondays to go to the gym by 5. The first thing I see when I get home is going to be that 7 a.m. task.
Yeah. And so is this because, like, the book's obviously a huge project, right? Like, it's a big, big amount of work that you need to undertake. But say something smaller in your business, too. Do you go through still this big process of sort of like weighing out what you have now and what you need, and also focusing on the fact that you need to generate revenue from something possibly quicker than a longer term project? But I'm just wondering, like, are you this methodical sort of on the smaller projects, or do you, like, will you possibly half hour after this call get this idea and, like, within like 2 hours you're like running with it and like, no, I'll get this done by the end of the week, and just that's it, follow your gut and go? Do you do that too, or is that something that is not within you?
Oh, I get a new idea for a new business probably every 20 minutes. One of the best things, though, and this is what I think that you're getting at, is more of like I'll keep a Moleskine notebook with me. And I was terrible at this at first in just writing down ideas and letting them sit there. But someone gave me this really good idea a while back. She said, every morning when you wake up, you're going to have a ton of ideas, right? Grab out your journal and just write down like the 3 to 5 things that come to your head first and do this every day for a month. And then at the end of the month, go back through and find what are the 2 or 3 things that you kept writing over and over that kept popping up in your mind. Those are the things that you should probably work on, because if it keeps coming up in your mind, if it's like the first thing that you're thinking about in the morning, it's probably something that you should do. It's probably a little more important than the other, 200 things you wrote out over the course of the last 29 or 30 days. And so this was something that I started doing, is I keep this notebook with me in my backpack when I leave for the office, or if I'm home, it's sitting on my desk. It's always around so that I can start writing out these ideas as they come to me throughout the day. And then going in at the end of the week or at the end of the month and finding the different ideas that I've written more than one time and obviously spent more brain power on. And those are usually the things that I'll try to focus on.
I like that. And it frees up a lot of, I guess, like, just capacity within your brain of like thinking about these throughout the day, like, oh, should I just be doing this instead? Should I? It's like, well, no, I know I'll go back at the end of the week or the end of the month and look and see what I've been thinking about. And because I think if we remove that emotion, because you're right, every 20 minutes a new idea comes, then what do? You can't just act on all of them because you have to follow through on some things.
Yeah, you would never get anywhere. And so I think that this is probably the best complement to the sort of calendar idea as a to-do list, is this is almost like your secondary or, you know, your additional list of like longer term goals versus, you know, your daily and weekly goals. I think this is kind of like where the ideas come from that you work on over the next year. You know, the book was just a concept back in March and April of last year. And it was this concept that kept coming up and kept coming up. But if I stopped right there and started working on it that week, I would have made no money that month because I probably would have seen it all the way through to completion.
Exactly. So the book was something that came up over and over and over again. Finally, you're like, okay, I have to get this out. This is something I need to do.
Absolutely. I mean, it was something where even for the last 2 or 3 years, I always said I hated writing. I actually always tell people growing up, my mom was an occupational therapist. And so she used to try to teach me how to hold my pencil properly. And being such the rebel that I was as a kid, I always taught myself how to improperly hold a pencil. So those 15 page papers in college, I would be in so much pain with my hand cramping up that I would just hate writing. But I always thought, you know, having a book would be pretty cool. Not the process of making it, but having it would be cool. And I met a guy through my podcast who was like, well, you don't have to write it. You know, there's dictation services and all these other things you can do. And I was like, oh my God, this is like the answer to my prayers.
That's awesome. Who was this person?
This was Chandler Bolt with Self Publishing School.
Nice. Very nice. Chandler Bolt. All right. All right, Stefan, this has been an excellent conversation that I've really, really, really enjoyed. I want to wrap up on one question for you. And you're still, I mean, fairly early on in this whole entrepreneurial journey. But as like going forward and just as entrepreneurs, as dreamers that we are, right? We're always, I think, setting our successes, like kind of projecting them into the future. And much like the horizon, when you're walking towards the horizon, you never get there. So we set goals. In 1 month when you get to visit this place, or in 6 months when you hit this revenue goal, or in 1 year when you release another best-selling book, you will be successful. Yet, right before you get there, of course, you just set 5 loftier goals into the future. And we end up living sort of in this gap where we're never at the success that we want to be. Doesn't matter where we are in our life and in our business, we always seem to be pushing ahead to more things, which, of course, we have to do. But I would love right now, Stefan, if you could stop, turn around, look at where you've come, everything you've come through, the wins, the losses, the highs, the lows of your entrepreneurial journey up till today, and tell me how you feel about what you've accomplished up till now.
You know, it's very rare that we as entrepreneurs really stop to look back and do this. So it's thank you so much for, you know, bringing this up. It sometimes takes another person to get us to stop and say, oh my God, like I really did do that. That's pretty cool. And I mean, looking back, man, you know, I'm only 26. And if you told me when I graduated college in 2010 that I would have launched, you know, a number one best-selling book, that I would have been the host of a podcast that a year later has over 120 episodes, that I would have traveled 25 times in a year without paying for a full airplane ticket, I would have said you're nuts. I mean, I was this kid in college who always said, I was a film major, and I said, you know, after graduation, I'm going to walk across that stage and just go to California and just make it. And I'm only, what, six years later, sitting here with a totally different story and completely just in awe of where it's taken me, in awe of the people that I've met and interacted with. And I mean, it's just, it's almost hard to explain how grateful I am in this moment to see, you know, what's happened. Because I mean, I just can't even imagine that I made it, you know, through all the things that I've been through. I've had so many times where I've sat down and I've been on the cusp of something so huge. And I said, you know, I could turn around and walk away right here. You know, I could turn off the computer. I could walk out of the house. I could leave right now, sell all my things and, you know, just like go move to Thailand and live out the rest of my days in a hammock on the beach. And I've stuck with it. And it's just absolutely, it amazes me to see where it's gone. And I think that that's really the inspiration and the motivation for me to always be looking for more and to seek higher and greater and better But it's also so important to stop and look at where you are right now. Look, I have a roof over my head. I don't live at home with my parents. I've got, money coming in. I can turn on the heat even though it's 20 degrees outside. I mean, that's pretty darn good if you ask me.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. And we've got to talk about your business in passing, and we've got to talk about your book in passing. And it is A Life Rescripted, which you kind of just sort of explained in another way. Exactly. And you have this brilliant book that is going to help other people do this. So could you please tell people where about the book and then where they can find a copy of it?
Yeah, so Life Rescripted, Find Your Purpose and Design Your Dream Life Before the Curtains Close, it was so important that this was inspired out of how I created my life. I've seen far too many people, whether it's coaches or trainers or mentors or, quote unquote gurus, who are teaching other people how to, run their business, live their life, do anything, and they're not living it themselves. And so I really sat there when I started writing this and I looked back and said, okay, what did I do? And the coolest part about it is there's this legal notepad that sits on my desk and it's been here for 2 years now. And just over a year ago, I sat down and wrote out who I am on paper, like everything, how much money I have in the bank, what my workout routine is, what I'm eating, what I'm putting into my body. I mean, every aspect about me. Like if you looked at this paper, you would know who Zephan is. And I think that people aren't taking that moment to stop and figure out, who am I when I at my core when you take away everything? And so that inspiration kind of started when I started travel hacking and couch surfing my way around the country. And I really learned, who is Zephan when you take away his car, when you take away his memory foam bed, when you take away his home? I was in strangers' houses. I didn't know where or when my next meal was. It wasn't like I could just walk down to the fridge and get it out. I didn't know how I would be driving from place to place. And so it's really about getting to your core story of who you are when you pull away all the outside factors and then rewriting that story to be something that you really want it to be. And I think at the end of the book, this is the best way to explain it is if you think of your life like a movie, and at the end of the movie, what happens? The credits start to roll and this music starts to play. And everyone kind of has this song that they would love to have in the credits of their life. But the question is, are you actually living that way right now? Or is this just kind of your motivational pump up music before you go to the gym and work out? And I think that when you can truly align with that and say that your life is so representative of this soundtrack of what you want your life to be, I think that's when you've really lived a life rescriptive. You've sat down and you've changed that whole story to be exactly who you are at your core and who you've always wanted to be. And so that's what Life Rescripted is about, is it shares my journey and then it also kind of walks you through my process of how I got there.
Nice. I love it. I love it. So, Life Rescripted, where do we find it?
Yep, it's on Amazon, available on both Kindle and paperback. And the quickest way to get there is just head on over to liferescriptedbook.com. And there's a dash in the title in the book on Amazon, but not on the website. So it's just liferescriptedbook.com.
Liferescriptedbook.com. I'll have a link to that in the show notes, as well as yearofpurpose.com, where you can learn more about Zephan and his podcast, as well as a link to reddit.com churning and a couple other things we've mentioned in the show. Zephan, again, thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for spending this time with us here today. I really do appreciate it. And please just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Yeah, thanks, John. I really appreciate you having me here. And, thank you to all the listeners who are tuning into this. I'm sure it means a lot to John.
Thank you so much, Zephan. That was a fun conversation. I really, really enjoyed that. And yeah, I hope we meet up somewhere down the line at a conference or something. But you're out there listening, and this is cool. This is a really cool conversation. I think that you would probably agree. Zephan he's right in the thick of it, right? I mean, he has this media company. And he's like consulted for other companies doing video work. And then he went through this whole transition, this whole travel hacking thing, and came out with this Year of Purpose. And this is really cool. This is something that it resonated with me, and it probably did with you too. And I recommend you check out his book and his podcast, because he's a smart guy, but more importantly, he's taking, I think he's trying to do the work that matters. He's trying to really get out there and do things that are meaningful to him and to the world. And I think that you might want to do something like that too. I'm going out on a limb there, but I know that this is really important to me, doing work like this. And I think it is what draws us all together here when we spend this time together. But I won't go too far into that. So Zeffen, during our conversation, said a lot of smart things. He did. He said a lot of things that really hit me on a certain level, and a lot of things that really caught my attention. So I went back and listened. And when I listened to it, there was a lot of things. But there was one thing. There was one thing that Zeffen said that really, really, really stood out to me. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
As they come to me throughout the day, and then going in at the end of the week or at the end of the month and finding the different ideas that I've written more than one time and obviously spent more brain power on. And those are usually the things that I'll try to focus on.
And that's the hack. Yes, Zeffen, Zeffen, Zeffen. I love this. I love the simplicity of this because we all deal with, this is two things I think involved here. So we all deal with obviously that whole shiny object and not knowing what to focus on next. And so this idea of keeping track of it and then seeing what keeps repeating itself in your brain, that's the thing that you should probably focus on. But another whole thing is that we often think about a lot of things, and it's like this whole shower. Like, you can, have you seen those things in the shower where you can buy like a little whiteboard for your shower? So because it's a known thing that in the shower that you come up with these ideas because of the reason that we're not trying to think of ideas. It's like a meditation. It's like we're not thinking actively. So as soon as you let sort of the subconscious come, then these ideas will come to you, and you can come up with these ideas. But this is, so maybe this is three things, sorry. Because the third thing is that keeping this notebook, and I now keep, I have three of these notebooks. So last time I was in your beautiful country, if you are from the United States, sorry for everyone else out there, I'm Canadian, but last time I was in the States, it was like Target or something. I went in and I bought these little paper, they're miniature, they're like, I don't know, they're probably like 6 inches or something high by like 4 inches or something. I'll link to them in the show notes for you if you wanted to buy them. They're super cheap. Three, I think, for like $5 or something. And they're Moleskine, they say on them. So it's Moleskine brand, but they're just cardboard with lined paper inside. And I literally write everything down. One thing, because I write articles now for numerous different blogs, and I still do my weekly newsletter for you great people that are on my email list. If you're not, you should get on there. It's a great spot. Hacktheentrepreneur.com. Always be selling. But I used to struggle Saturday or Sunday, whenever it was I was going to write this email for the Sunday to go out. And so now throughout the week, ideas just come to me. Something happens. I'll be out with a friend, or I'll be playing drums, or I'll be doing something, and this idea will come to me. And rather than think that I'm going to keep this, because you know that you've tried to keep so many thoughts in your head, like, I'll remember that, I'll remember that. And then it's like, oh, you never forget it. So I just write them all down. Comes time to writing, I just open it up to that page, and there we go. Just nonstop ideas. And I just pick one and I go with it. I honestly believe that our brains work like a computer. And so we have this RAM, right? This random access memory. And you know, when your computer doesn't have enough RAM because it's got too many programs running, it will just slow right down or else completely crash. I think our brains are the same. I think we have to get these small things. And although you need to be coming up with these ideas all the time and working on them, you need to just write them down and just get them out of your head, because they're taking up useful space. They really, really, really are. And so, Zeffen, that was a long rant I did after this, but I think that it's really, really, really important. And you've simplified it to such a point that I think it needed to be driven home. So that's it. Write down your ideas, keep them. And then the ideas that keep coming up to you after a week or a month or 3 months, whenever it is you want to get onto your next project, go through this book and start seeing. If you see a consistency, like an idea coming up and up and up or developing out, then that's the one. Go for it. That's it. That's it. That's the one. Do it. Awesome. All right. Thank you, Zeffen. And yeah, thank you so much again for joining me today. It's been an absolute blast, as always. Hacktheentrepreneur.com. you should go there. You should get on the email list. I would absolutely appreciate it. And yeah, we'll have a conversation. You can reply to that first email. I'm loving getting emails from you guys when you're like, I've listened to you tell me to get on your email list like 25 times. Finally decided to do it. I love getting those emails. I really, really, truly do. And it makes it worth me saying this over and over and over again. I truly, truly think that you should be on that list. And I think that we should have a relationship of some sort. That sounded really wrong, but that's not how I meant it. But yeah, sorry. It's been fun. I thank you so much. Truly, I do, for taking the time to stop by again. Please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.